Nikki Strong playing you the pop music you love.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Brian Lin reports on one Indian city's use of facial recognition technology to fight crime. John Russell and I present the everyday grammar lesson, Grammar and Christmas. We close with the next part of The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lin.
Officials in the Indian city of Hyderabad say police there depend on facial recognition technology to fight crime. Hyderabad is the capital of India's south-central state of Telangana. In 2013, Islamic terrorists exploded bombs at a market there, killing 19 people and wounding more than 100 others. The city hurried to establish a network of surveillance cameras. Today, more than 700,000 cameras are active on the streets. The Center for Hyderabad's Facial Recognition Operations is the newly built Command and Control Center. Workers at the center have the ability to continuously examine data collected by cameras and cell phone transmitters. The system can pull up images from any available camera across the city. It then uses artificial intelligence, AI, methods to try to identify known criminals in the area. Police Commissioner C.V. Anand told the Associated Press the new command center, opened in August, seeks to connect technologies across different government departments. The Director General of the Telangana State Police, Mahender Reddy, said the operation cost $75 million to complete. The use of facial recognition and AI have been increasing in India in recent years. Police have used both technologies to watch large gatherings in an effort to identify criminals. In addition to using the technologies to fight serious crimes, officials in Hyderabad have also approved their use for issuing traffic violations and enforcing COVID-19 rules. Police officers in the city are equipped with an app that permits them to pull up collected facial images as they work in the field. The app also connects nearly all police officers in the city to a series of government and emergency services. Critics of the system say it can result in mistaken identities and violate the privacy of citizens. Anand said photos of traffic violators and pandemic restrictions violators are kept temporarily unless needed for use in court. Then the images are supposed to be destroyed. He expressed surprise that any citizen would object to the system. "If we need to control crime, we need to have surveillance," Anand said. Critics raised concerns about the technology in January after a Hyderabad official gave a demonstration of how it was designed to work. The official put an image of a female reporter's face into the system. Within seconds, the tool returned 5 possible criminal matches from the state's records. 3 of the possible matches were men. Hyderabad has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on police vehicles, surveillance cameras, facial recognition tools, and other crime-fighting technologies. Anand says the investment has helped the state bring in more private and foreign investment. This includes a development center completed by Apple in 2016 and a major Microsoft data center announced in March. When these companies decide to invest in a city, they first look at the law and order situation, Anand said. He credited such technologies for drops in crime across the state. Muggings to steal jewelry, for example, fell from 1,033 incidents a year to fewer than 50 a year after cameras and other technologies were deployed, Anand said. India's National Crime Records Bureau is also seeking to build what could be among the world's largest facial recognition systems. The plans are in line with the administration of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who has pushed for increased information technology development across the national government. The government has called for smart policing methods using drones, AI-powered surveillance cameras, and facial recognition. The technologies have received wide support across political parties and have already begun to expand to states across India, said Apar Gupta. He is head of the New Delhi-based Internet Freedom Foundation. There is a lot of social and civic support for it, too. People don't always fully understand, Gupta said. They see technology and think this is the answer. I'm Brian Lynn.
Many Americans experience surprise or disappointment when they wake up on Christmas Day. They might be surprised or disappointed by a family member's actions. They might be happy or unhappy about a Christmas gift. Imagine a child expects to get an Xbox or PlayStation for Christmas. On Christmas morning, they quickly open their gift. Inside is an English grammar book. They might feel disappointed. The Everyday Grammar team would prefer the new English grammar book. But if you are like most young people, you would probably rather have a new video game system. Today, we are going to explore those feelings of surprise and disappointment. In other words, we are going to explore how speakers show that reality was better or worse than their expectations.
Many languages use words to express expectation. Speakers also use words to express how events are not happening as expected. This idea is known as counter-expectation. Do not worry about the term. Just remember that it means that speakers use words to show that reality is going against or countering their expectations. English has many words that serve this purpose. Three of the most common are the words even, still, and actually. You will often hear them in casual, everyday speech. Speakers use these words to show surprise or disappointment. The pitch of their voice tells you what they mean. Let's study examples of each word.
Speakers often use the word even to show disappointment or surprise. Imagine a young child that expects a phone call from a family member, perhaps an uncle or grandparent. The phone call never comes. The child might say the following.
What's wrong with him? He didn't even call me on Christmas Day.
Here, the child is expressing disappointment. She could have expressed the same idea in a much longer statement, such as, I was expecting him to call on Christmas Day, but I didn't hear from him. Why didn't he give me a call? Even highlights the child's disappointment because it emphasizes that the family member did not try to call. Even does not always have a sad meaning. It can have a happy meaning, too. Imagine a man named Ted. Ted is a forgetful man. He forgets to send letters or gifts to his parents. Ted's parents might have the following talk after they get a Christmas letter from him.
Did you see Ted's letter?
Yeah, he even sent us a gift.
Here, the word even shows a pleasant surprise. Ted's mother did not expect a gift from him. By saying, he even sent us a gift, she is suggesting that Ted has gone beyond her expectations.
Americans sometimes use still for showing how reality does not quite meet their expectations. Consider this example from the 1986 film Ferris Bueller's Day Off. At the end of the film, Ferris says the following lines. A different speaker might say similar lines after a lengthy, tiring, and disagreeable family Christmas party.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
In the film, you can see the surprised look on Ferris's face. When he says, "You're still here?" you can tell he did not expect people to still be around. He is a little disappointed. Now, imagine a different situation. A family is having a Christmas dinner. They are looking for one family member, Uncle Bob. They wonder if he left without saying goodbye.
Have you seen Uncle Bob?
No, did he leave? Wait, there he is. He's still here.
The way the final speaker says still shows that she is surprised to learn he was still at the dinner. She expected otherwise. A third common word that shows surprise or disappointment is actually. Actually suggests something is true, even when it differs from what might have been thought or expected. Remember Uncle Bob? Bob has always been a nice guy. Imagine Uncle Bob sees a Christmas present he likes and then runs away with it. A speaker might say,
I can't believe it. Uncle Bob actually stole her Christmas gift.
Here, the speaker uses actually to emphasize the unexpectedness of a happening. Uncle Bob stealing the present. She does not sound very happy. Speakers can use actually to show positive feelings, too. Think back to our character Ted, the guy who always forgets to give gifts for Christmas. His parents could have shown their surprise at receiving a gift from Ted by saying the following.
Ted actually gave us a gift.
Here, the word actually shows that they are pleasantly surprised at this strange happening. Ted remembered Christmas.
The next time you are listening to an English speaker, try to find examples of words that show counter expectation. Is the speaker expressing surprise or disappointment? How does the speaker change the pitch of their voice? By answering these questions, you will start to learn how English speakers communicate emotions in subtle ways.
Excuse me, John, are you still recording your show?
Yes.
You're still recording? We have to go to the Christmas party.
Oh, no. I had actually forgotten about that. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The American Civil War in the 1860s was fought not only on land. There was a great deal of fighting between the Union and Confederate navies. This part of the war, the Sea War, is often forgotten, but it was important. The Union victory might not have been possible without the successes of its navy. Many battles took place just off the coast of the United States. Many others took place farther away in international waters. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe talk about the naval side of the Civil War.
As soon as the war started, President Abraham Lincoln wanted to block the South's major ports. He wanted to prevent the South from shipping its agricultural products to other countries in exchange for industrial goods. Lincoln's plan was good, but it had one major weakness. The Union Navy was too small for the job. The Confederate seacoast was long. It extended from Chesapeake Bay to Mexico, a distance of 5,600 kilometers. There were not enough ships in the Union Navy to blockade all of it. Many months would pass before the Union could build up an effective naval force.
The Confederacy had no navy at the start of the Civil War. The Confederate government had little money to create one, and the South had no factories to build one. For a while, the Confederacy was able to get warships from Britain. Then the Union put diplomatic pressure on Britain to stop this support. For the most part, the Confederacy depended on privately owned ships to get goods in and out of the South. About 20 of these private ships flew the Confederate flag. Most were very successful in the beginning. The Florida, for example, captured more than 30 ships before being captured itself off the coast of Brazil in 1864. The Alabama captured more than 60 ships. It was finally sunk in a battle with the Kearsarge off the coast of France. The Shenandoah sailed in the Pacific Ocean. It captured 40 ships. After the war ended, the Shenandoah tied up in Liverpool, England.
In addition to these victories, the Confederacy claimed responsibility for several new naval technologies during the Civil War. One was the first modern submarine. This ship was 10 meters long. It sank 4 times while being tested. It was raised each time and put back into service. One night, it fired its torpedoes at a much larger Union ship and sank it. But the explosion was so great that it tore apart the submarine, and it sank too. The Confederacy also developed very effective underwater explosive devices for use in the harbors.
Even with its victories and technologies, however, the Confederacy could not stop the Union Navy. The Union Navy was bigger to begin with and grew much faster. During the first 2 years of the Civil War, the Union captured several southern ports, Fort Hatteras and Roanoke Island, North Carolina, Port Royal, South Carolina, Pensacola, Florida, and perhaps most importantly, New Orleans, Louisiana. New Orleans lay near the mouth of the Mississippi River. It was the largest city in the South. It was the largest seaport. It had become a busy industrial center, producing war equipment for Confederate forces. If the Union could capture New Orleans, it would control the Mississippi River. President Lincoln appointed Navy officer David Farragut to lead the attack on New Orleans.
To reach the city, Farragut had to sail his ships past 2 Confederate forts on the Mississippi River. He shelled the forts for 6 days and nights, but the forts were so strong that the shells caused little damage. He decided not to wait any longer. One dark night, Farragut led 17 Union warships up the river in a line. The Confederate forces heard them and began to fire. One ship was sunk. 3 others were damaged so badly that they could not continue. But 13 made it safely past the forts. When Farragut reached New Orleans, he found the city defenseless. Several thousand Confederate soldiers had fled. They knew they could not defend against the bigger Union force. Only civilians remained. Farragut captured New Orleans without a fight. The Confederate flag was lowered, and the United States flag was raised over the city.
Several weeks before Farragut captured New Orleans, a new kind of Navy battle was fought off Hampton Roads, Virginia. It was the first battle between iron ships. On the Confederate side was the Virginia. It had been built from what remained of a captured Union warship called the Merrimack. The Virginia was like no other warship ever seen in the world. It was 80 meters long. The part that showed above the waterline was built of wood 60 centimeters thick. This part was covered with sheets of iron 10 centimeters thick. 10 windows were cut into it. Behind each window was a cannon. In a battle, the windows would open, the cannons would fire, and the windows would close again. At the front was a sharp point of iron that could smash through the sides of wooden ships. The Virginia could not move fast, and it was difficult to control. It took almost 30 minutes to turn around. Still, there seemed to be no way to stop this iron monster. It already had destroyed 2 Union warships, and it was coming back for more.
The Union ship chosen to fight the Virginia was the Monitor. It, too, was covered with iron, but it was much smaller than the Virginia, and it carried only 2 cannons. These 2 cannons, however, were on a part of the ship that could turn in a complete circle. They could be aimed in any direction. The Monitor and the Virginia faced each other on the morning of March 9th, 1862. They moved in close, very close, then began to fire. A Confederate cannonball hit the iron side of the Monitor and bounced away. Union sailors cheered. The cannons of the Virginia could do no damage. But the Union sailors soon discovered that their cannons could do no damage either.
The men inside the 2 ships suffered from noise, heat, and smoke. The roar of their own cannons was extremely loud. Even louder was the crash of enemy cannonballs and explosive shells on the iron walls. Some of the men suffered burst eardrums. At least one man was struck unconscious from the force of a cannonball against the iron. The men quickly learned to stay away from the walls. Smoke from the cannons filled the ships. Then it floated out over the water. At times, the 2 ships could not see each other.
The Virginia and the Monitor fought for 3 hours. Neither ship scored an important hit. Neither suffered serious damage. Then the cannons of the Virginia fell silent. The Confederate ship had used up its gunpowder. It also had used up much of its fuel. It was lighter now and was floating higher in the water. A well-aimed cannonball could hit below its iron covering and sink it. The Confederate captain decided to withdraw. The Union captain, too, was ready to break off the battle. He decided not to follow. Neither ship could claim victory. But the Monitor had kept the Virginia from destroying more of the Union's wooden warships. The Virginia itself was to live just 2 more months. Union forces seized the Confederate Navy base at Norfolk, where the Virginia was kept. And the Iron Monster was sunk to keep it from falling into Union hands.
The battle at Hampton Roads between the Virginia and the Monitor was indecisive. It did not have much effect on the final result of America's Civil War, but it was still an important battle, for it marked the beginning of the end of the world's wooden navies.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.